I'm James Dyson, and I'm a designer and engineer, and I spend my days trying to solve technical problems and problems that people might have using everyday products, like hand dryers. I always hated hand dryers. So I'm really an engineer trying to solve problems and having lots of failures. Today we're launching two new fans. We launched a desk fan about 6 months ago, and we've now done what's called a tower and pedestal fan, which have higher flow than our desk fan, and which could be used at home, but also in offices. And they don't have blades, and they deliver a much smoother stream of airflow. Blades chop the air, and so you feel this sort of buffeting effect. With our system of jetting air out of an annulus and drawing in air from behind it, you get a totally smooth airflow, which is very comfortable. And of course, the fans are easy to clean and are completely safe. And one of the annoying things I find with particularly pedestal fans is adjusting the height. You know, you have to undo up a clamp, and then for the angle, you have to clamp it at an angle. And that's made more difficult because the motor is up at the top in the middle of the fan blades, so all the weight is up at the top. We put our weight down at the bottom, so it's very stable, and the air goes up that nice flat aluminium tube there and into what we call the amplifier. And so the height is adjusted just by, I'll do it, by pushing it, and it stays where you push it. And that's because we've got a tensator constant rate spring in there, and it's only supporting this really very light amplifier. And similarly, if I push that, it stays there. So you don't have that awful business of undoing clamps, getting into the right position, doing up again, finding it falls forward a few degrees. And it's remote controlled, and that sits there by magnet, so you don't lose it. You've got somewhere to put it. And it fits the curvature, as you can see.
How do you decide which problems to tackle? Because I remember when, just before you launched the fan last summer, you sent out this email saying, guess what we've tackled next, and we were all trying to guess in the office what it was. But how do you decide, right, we're going to do a vacuum cleaner or we're going to do a fan? Is it because your personal experience of being frustrated with things or what?
Yeah, we choose products that have where we have a personal problem with them. I mean, the obvious one is the hand dryer, because, you know, you go into those, you use those hot air hand dryers, and you give up and you wipe your hands on your trousers, and your hands feel chapped and so on. And what they're trying to do is, you know, actually turn the water into steam, which is a very energy-consuming process and takes a long time. So it's frustration with everyday products, and we lodge that frustration in our brains and then develop technology to try and solve it. And sometimes we think of a better idea while we're developing that technology, or we come across something that actually does something far better than the thing we were trying to use it for. So the important thing is to be always experimenting, building prototypes, trying to develop new technology. And the hand dryer, for example, came out of a product we hadn't yet launched. We were developing that air blade technology and suddenly noticed this, how well it dried your hands, and realized that you didn't need heat. You could just scrape the water off your hands like a windscreen wiper blade. So sometimes you just come across them by accident, and suddenly you've got a product, and then you can have the fun of developing the product from that technology idea.
Within your company, what is the process that leads to the end product? Presumably it's not a classic design process of sketching. Presumably it's much more involved in, is it what, physics and engineering? And how do you go about designing a better fan, for example?
You may observe a technology through building prototypes and testing things, or you may set out to develop a new technology like we did with our electric motors, for example. And very often that involves sketching at an early stage, and then you go into the workshop, machine shop, and test things, and the lab, and test things. And then you come back, and as you're developing the technology, you try to realize the product you're going to make with it. And absolutely you sketch, and we communicate to each other as engineers by sketching, and a few words, but sketching is the powerful way of doing it. And that's why my pencil, I haven't got one here, it's downstairs actually, is my favorite object, because it's what we use all day long. And it's how I express myself and how our engineers express themselves. So drawing is incredibly important, and the best engineers are always very good at drawing.
You mentioned earlier when asked how to describe yourself, you talked about designer and an engineer. Are the two things the same? Are they different? Can you describe what each of those different things are?
Yeah, I mean, I started off, when I started at the Royal College of Art in 1966, I started as a designer because, you know, I'd done classics at school, so the idea of being an engineer was rather, sort of, didn't really understand that at all. But as I started doing design, I realised that engineering was more important, really. And I was actually doing architecture at the time, and I realised that in the future, the engineering of building was going to express its, you know, the whole performance of the building and how it looked and so on. So I suddenly discovered I was unexpectedly interested in engineering. And so it is with products, that the engineering, the technology, is actually more important than how it looks. Because the reason I say that is that if something looks wonderful and performs badly, you really fall out of love with it. But if something looks awful but works really well, I don't say you fall totally in love with it, but you quite enjoy using it. I always think a BlackBerry is quite a good example. I mean, a BlackBerry is a wonderful thing to use, but it looks awful. Well, you know, it's not good looking. But nevertheless, it isn't totally horrible to use because it works well. So get the function right, how it works well, and then try and make it look exciting and interesting.
What's your view on the current design world? Because at a time when design that's not particularly functional has become sort of very popular in magazines and things like that, and I know you're always pushing the kind of engineering, the kind of industry side of design. What's your view on what the design world is doing at the moment?
Well, it's interesting because design courses at universities have really become design engineering courses. There are very few product, what they used to call product design courses, which is, you might well sort of call it styling, have almost disappeared. And that's not just true in England any longer, although England spearheaded it, and the Royal College of Art, in fact, spearheaded it. But that's what's happening in the world, because everybody's realising that... I mean, the thing is that styling only became a profession, or if you like, product design in the 30s with Harvey Earl. You know, before that, engineers, the Victorian era and early part of the 20th century, engineers designed the product. And I think in the 21st century, we're swinging back to the designer, the engineer, as being the person who creates how the product looks and how it's to like to use and what it's like to feel and to think of the concept in the first place. But I think someone who is more of a designer than an engineer is very often more capable of thinking of a product conceptually. So I think there's absolutely a place for someone who is perhaps more interested in what a product's like to use or feel or so on, then they can often see the whole story better than an engineer who's heavily involved in the technology. So I think that the two can mix well, and there's no reason why someone can't be both.
Can you just quickly describe your career and how you got started and some of the biggest successes and maybe some of the biggest frustrations as well?
Well, I started off at the Royal College of Art doing design and then went to an engineering company to learn engineering. So I decided that just designing the product wasn't enough for me. I wanted to develop the technology and manufacture the product and not actually sell it so much as be involved in people who used it. I wanted to be involved in that whole process. I didn't want to be a part of it, and I didn't want anyone else to be telling me what to design. Maybe a control freak, but I love manufacturing. I love it because it's so difficult. Things always go wrong every day. It's a very frustrating thing. But the sight of products that you develop the technology for and designed going down a production line is very, very thrilling. So the first product wasn't my own company at all. It was a public company, an engineering company, and I engineered and designed a landing craft that the chairman had invented. It's a high-speed landing craft. So I learned the whole business of manufacturing and selling it around the world, exporting it around the world. And then I decided to go off my own and do a thing called the ball barrow, which is sitting up there with a big red ball, I felt much happier doing that because that's a product I used myself. I didn't actually use Landingcraft. I mean, they were fun to use, but I wasn't a customer of a Landingcraft, whereas I was a customer of a wheelbarrow. So it was great fun being a designer and actually making something that people used at home every day. It wasn't a commercial success. And while I was doing it, and actually came from a piece of production equipment we had for paint spraying equipment to paint the frames, I came across the idea of using cyclones and vacuum cleaners to collect dust. Because the bag clogs, you know, I won't bore you with the story because you've heard it 100 times, but so I saw a bit of technology to overcome a really irritating and problem that really frustrated me using a vacuum cleaner at home. It's always a wonderful way to start that, having this sort of frustration with something. So I set about developing it, and it took 5 years and 5,500 prototypes. And I was heavily in debt and thought I really ought to license it rather than, well, I couldn't imagine that I could borrow money, huge amounts, millions of pounds, and set up against these big multinationals. So I went off to try and license it to them all and failed. I wasted about 5 or 6 years trying to do that. And eventually I decided that really I should do it myself. And everybody said, no, you must be mad, you're not a businessman. So I went and borrowed £1 million and did it. And luckily it worked. And gradually I've managed to build up a fantastic team of creative people and clever scientists and engineers. And we're now incidentally wanting to recruit another 350 here in England. And we have great fun all day long, solving problems, still finding frustrations, having lots of failures every day with our prototypes. So it's the same sort of work that I've been doing for 40 years, but on a bigger scale and working with lots of people who are now much more intelligent and creative than I am.
Do you look at the world and think, my God, this is so crazy, the products are so rubbish, they could all be better if only someone applied?
Oh, no, I think the products in the world are getting much better. And, you know, part of the reason for that is that any country anywhere in the world can make anything now. And sadly, not so much in Britain, but in China, India, you know, even Iran, Korea and Japan, you know, they're producing lots and lots of engineers and scientists, and they realise that there's a big, tremendous international trade competition, and that to export anything to create wealth, you've got to have something that other people haven't got. You've got to have technology. And so everybody, most countries are developing technology at an astonishing rate. I think products are fantastic now compared with what they were 40 years ago. Cars work, and an absolute delight. Vacuum cleaners work. And, you know, almost everywhere you look, think of, you know, bean-to-cup coffee machines, and everything works incredibly well now.